The question we have here is, what do we mean by an Innes tradition of research? And is the Innes tradition of research responsible for what I think is a sharp differentiation that can be made between the papers presented here and, for example, the 10 studies of the far north that recently appeared in the Journal of Communications? Now let me say a little something about those 10 studies, because they're not in front of you here. They were conducted in the Baffin Island region. They are similar to studies which were conducted by the DOC and by the DIA. Essentially, they are impact studies. In this case, the 10 studies were about the impact of television comparing communities that did have television with communities that didn't have television. But they're very similar to studies conducted by the DOC, which compare the impact of satellites on medical services or the impact of pipelines on various other social conditions or interaction patterns. Now, the interesting thing about these 10 studies is that they would also claim to be in the Innes tradition. And that must mean that there are two notions of an Innes tradition. What we have here in the three papers are detailed historical studies integrating political, economic, and cultural data, fully cognizant of the interplay of vested interests. In those studies, very specific studies, locating patterns and processes which are recurrent. And the Innes legacy is not a theory, but basically a methodology from which theoretical insights emerge. The Usher study could perhaps be expanded with a background to the political history of the North. The Steve study could perhaps look more deeply in the role of different modes of production within the Yukon. The Valiskaka study could perhaps include, and probably should have included, more of a discussion of the Hudson Bay Company. But the second approach pulls a theory, or a kind of theory, out of Innes, and uses that theory as a framework through which to view the data. And the theory has been called, occasionally, the metropolis hinterland theory, and sometimes it's been called dependency theory, and sometimes it's been called control theory, and sometimes it's viewed as mass technology coming in and imposing certain kinds of ways on local cultural tradition, and sometimes it's simply a reification of the concepts of space and time. Now, it may be obvious, or it should be obvious, that I'm partial to the first, and partly because I believe that is where the richness of the Innes' own work lies. And all three of these studies, though Usher's less than the other two, are in the tradition of the first model. But let me look at the other reason why I prefer the first as opposed to the second notion of what is the Innes legacy to future research. I think there are certain real traps in the second approach. The first is to reify the concept of metropolis hinterland, that if in listening to the papers yesterday to get a sense that the relationships of control and how that control is mediated are much more complicated than a simple notion of dependency metropolis onto hinterland, that there is also a relationship back, and that how that control is exercised is worthy of a great deal of study and not something which can simply be compressed into a notion of metropolis hinterland. And the second thing which is related to that, or the second point that I think is a trap in viewing Innes as theory, is that it tends to reduce the political aspects of development, the analysis that's so rich in Innes, to a simple notion of extension of control. That the only thing you're looking at is how the metropolis, the only politics you're looking at, the only details of how political forces and vested interests interplay are how control is exerted on the marginal areas. And the third thing, the third trap that I see in the second approach is something I call the before and after syndrome. And I'll take the television studies in the North as a perfect example. They tend to view the North as a social laboratory, as a, well, here's a community that doesn't have television, and here's a community that does have television, and we'll go in and we'll do some attitude surveys that measure how violent people are, or whether or not they lock their doors before and after. And I think that that is an unethical, at best, approach to the North or to any peoples anywhere, to view them as a before and after social laboratory. But the second thing that they do is they tend to have a kind of technological determinism. And if I have a critique of the Vallis Caucus paper, is that in the last section, the section which didn't get presented to you today, in the television section, there was a sense that television kind of came in out of nowhere, that it was the technology which is imported, not the people which import technology, not the interests which make sure the technology goes there in the first place. And that bias is in all of the DLC studies, where you talk about satellites going into the North as if there were not satellite companies taking those satellites into the North. In the early part of the Vallis Caucus paper, she talks about the role of the missionary, and she talks about the role of the church, and she might well have talked more about the role of the Hudson Bay Company. In that part of the paper, she avoided the notion that literacy or that script itself was a determining factor. In the television part, which you didn't hear, there's a feeling that it's the television got there on its own. Well, of course it didn't. Okay, fourth point, or fourth trap, is a point that Steve makes, which is that to view Innes's work as a theory makes distribution technologies, like roads itself, themselves generative of change. And I think that's anti-Innesian. If I can use that kind of word, that certainly while roads, and it's argued, like transportation routes, are linked to specific patterns of development, there's nothing to say that the construction of a road, or say in the DOC studies, the use of a satellite will themselves generate the change. There's much more to it than that, and there's a much more interplay of issues of politics and economics and interests that doesn't get written into those studies. And finally, just a small point, the last trap that I talk into is a kind of a dichotomy that gets raised quite often out of Innes between regionalism, the local culture, and nationalism, i.e. the metropolitan area, that somehow if only the metropole would go away, then local culture would flourish. And it does get played out even provincially, you know, in terms of BC versus Toronto, and people use that kind of model and a so-called Innes model to explain why we in BC don't like Toronto, and that seems to me a fairly vacuous approach.